Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. On the line from Bristol, England is Tony Gosling. Welcome back to our program, Tony.
Hi again there, George. Thanks very much for inviting me on. Interesting, this Bilderberg conference is something, of course, I've been following for a long time, since I used to do it with Jim Tucker in, met in 2000, and we were covering it again in 2003. And I went again in 2016 just to make sure I was at Bilderberg for the Brexit referendum. And, of course, the project for the European Union, the common market, the Treaty of Rome is very much tied up with Europe. So this is an attempt really to make a United States of Europe modelled on the US of A. You know, so the idea, of course, during the American Civil War, one of the parts of it was getting rid of slavery, but another very important part was focusing power in Washington. And this is exactly what the EU is doing right now, and what Bilderberg is trying to do with the EU in Europe, is focus power, concentrate power. And amazingly, there are supposedly millions of people that think the idea of concentrating power in the hands of a wealthy, ruthless elite is a good idea, George.
Well, I tell you what, they're anti-Brexit, aren't they? You can tell that. One of the largest, Adonis over there, one of the largest anti-Brexit from the word go.
Well, this the Daily Express in the UK has covered this story, and I was chatting with some of the Bilderberg watchers who were speaking to the editor of the Daily Express, and the editor had never heard of Bilderberg, didn't know anything about it, and was rather shocked. He called it a Remainer Fest. In the newspaper on Friday, and so there's been a bit of coverage. It's good to see some of the mainstream press in the UK, and anyway, the pro-Brexit press covering Bilderberg for a change. The other thing they did is they exposed the secret participation of Prince Charles and the Duke of Edinburgh over the years. And this is one of the weird things, George, about, you know, the analysis of what is Bilderberg over the years, is I think it was the early 1800s that the Holy Roman Empire was officially extinguished. Of course, we had the same sort of thing with the Jesuits in the 18th century, being extinguished by the Pope. Now, you know, officially these things have gone, but actually in reality I think they carry on. And that's essentially why I'm talking about that. The Holy Roman Empire is something which was part of the Vatican, and it was basically an aristocracy that worked very closely together to rule Europe. And if it suited them to create a war between two countries in Europe, in other words, so they could consolidate power within their own country, that's exactly what they would do. And this is one of the things that struck, looking at the participation of Prince Philip and Prince Charles, is that this aristocracy, the top of the aristocracy nowadays, is an integral part of Bilderberg. We've got the Dutch king there today in Montreux. And I think also the venue of where they are this year is fascinating. I think the location of Montreux is fascinating because Switzerland is Swiss France, I suppose we could call it, Swiss-French area, Lake Geneva. Switzerland is very much a centre for finance, as we know, with, you know, money laundering right the way through the Second World War, doing foreign exchange for the Nazis through the Bank for International Settlements and Basel, and through UBS and various other banks in Switzerland. The Swiss preparing the plague bacillus, as Winston Churchill called it, a train of Bolsheviks to inject into Moscow at the time of the Russian Revolution. Swiss are very much tied up with intrigue in Europe. The other thing I discovered just recently is that the Habsburg Empire is alive and well in the personality of Karl von Habsburg. He's the president, he's just elected the president of something called the Pan-European Union, which has been going since 1923, and it's one of the first organisations that stated aim was the unification of Europe into one political unit. from 1923, it was founded in the same city as the Nazi Party was founded a few years afterwards in Munich. So this is all in the sort of similar area. Berchtesgaden, which is in the north of Switzerland, just over into the German border there, all the same area, which is where Hitler had his eagle's nest, where he spent much of his time looking out over the mountains and making big decisions like whether or not to invade Russia or the Soviet Union, as it was. And so this is that part of the world where they are. And I think also the other thing you must mention about Switzerland is the Bank for International Settlements, just the other side of Lake Constance, just up the road. Actually, no, it's Neuchâtel. And that is where all the central bankers of the world meet. That is, say, Federal Reserve, Bank of England, all from all over the world make decisions about where the money system is. So when you're looking at the occult government of the planet, this is based in that Bank for International Settlements. In fact, it's even classed as its own country. The Swiss police have no jurisdiction in the building and in the land surrounding the building. So it's a bit like having, say, Luxembourg or Liechtenstein, a completely different country where the bank is based. As I think there's a very good reason for that, because the people inside it are criminals. The bankers are criminals. They have robbed about £1 trillion, whatever that is in dollars, from the public in Europe and the United States as part of the bailouts in 2008, the biggest heist in history. And for representatives of the people behind that criminal operation, it's very much like one kind of James Bond films, you know, where you get all the criminals together doing a massive heist, getting all the gold out of Fort Knox, for example. But it's real, and it happened in 2008, and it's happening right now at Bilderberg in Montreux, because I certainly believe that they're looking now at the potential for causing a financial crash as Brexit happens on Halloween. Their choice, Halloween, 1st of October, which, by the way, wasn't a big thing in the UK up until World War II. People really did not celebrate Halloween at all. It's something that's been imported from the United States into Britain. But everyone in the UK obviously knows what Halloween is, and that it's the night that the souls or spirits of the dead are supposed to reappear. And that is a perfect time, of course, for nasty actions by people at the Bilderberg. And I think very easily and most likely be some sort of financial disaster to come when Britain finally exits the euro. And the reason Bilderberg and Brexit are absolutely tied together. They are the people that want it and have been lobbying, trying very, very hard to stop Brexit. And we know, so we have the announcement of the resignation of Theresa May, although she's not actually resigned. She's going to sign off Trump for some weird reason, which may mean that she's going to be signing documents while Trump is here, that the next Prime Minister will know nothing about, which, you know, is usual dodgy stuff that these people get up to. But I just think that's effectively what they're going to do. They're going to make those sorts of arrangements with the Prime Minister. One of the things we found out, fascinating thing, George, I was listening to Radio 4. There was one of the backbench Tory MPs phoned in the day, it was a week ago, when May announced that she was going to resign in 2 weeks' time. And they said, oh, well, all of the Brexit negotiations were carried out through Philip May, her husband. Nobody contacted, none of the MPs could contact Theresa May. She just simply wouldn't pick the phone up. The person who was conducting all those Brexit negotiations and keeping the MPs in touch with what was happening and taking their concerns to the civil service was Philip May. So he, of course, is he's part of Capital Group, which is a big American investment company, who just so happens to own most shareholder in BAE Systems and a very big shareholder in Lockheed Martin. So we're looking at the military-industrial complex, the financial investments in it, the sort of Carlyle Group type people, who are represented by Philip May, the husband of the Prime Minister, Theresa May. He's the guy that's making these decisions, I think, and Theresa May is doing what she's told. He's wearing her trousers, and it's thank God, you could even say, that she's now gone, and hopefully there will be no more holding up of Brexit. Because if she's been deliberately doing that, she put the Trojan horse of the backstop, the Northern Ireland backstop, in there, which no one was going to be able to accept, and she knew that the deal was never going to get through, The idea, of course, has been to just kick the can down the road as long as possible. They're trying to get a second referendum so that there'll be a whole nother vote as long as possible down the line, so that many of the people that voted to leave the EU, the Brexiteers, will be dead and won't be able to vote. And a lot of the young people who've been being hit by social media, the weaponized media, will be able to vote. So I think that's what's going to happen. There's also, of course, Mike Pompeo at Bilderberg this year. So we're looking at potential crash and Brexit on Halloween or soon after. And then, of course, we've got Mike Pompeo and his Iran war he's been trying to cook up. Jared Kushner's flying in direct from Tel Aviv, from seeing Netanyahu with, I would imagine, some very strong message for people at the Bilderberg. I mean, they do have to meet face-to-face because there will be, I think, signing off and making agreements with the top people, the Kissinger, etc., and some of the social media types for potential war and crash later this year, George. So that's how serious it is. I think it's as serious, at least, as the 2002 meeting, I think it was in Chantilly, where Jim Tucker came back saying, well, hang on, we've got reports from Bart staff that they're planning an invasion of Iraq. And everyone was very surprised, didn't believe it. But, of course, in 2003, that then happened. And I think now we should be... we haven't had any specific leaks, as far as I know. But the fact that on his world tour, trying to get the world behind his attack on Iran, Mike Pompeo is now is the ultimate venue for this campaign to get a war going with Iran is in Montreux at Bilderberg. So I think it's quite clear what he's going to be calling for. He's made it very clear he wants this war. The only trouble is he's a Christian Zionist, which means that he's slightly, should we say, a little bit unhinged about this. He thinks that what he's doing, it's got work. And this is always very dangerous. We've heard a lot about, you know, the Muslim fundamentalists, the dangers of that. But actually, it looks like Mike Pompeo is, you know, a Christian Zionist fundamentalist, which is every bit as dangerous, possibly more dangerous than some of the people from ISIS. You know, they believe that there's got to be this war and we're going to have this battle. There's no point in peace. So, you know, that's one of the reasons we haven't had peace in the Middle East, is because of the whole Christian Zionist philosophy, George.
Yeah, you know, Jared Kushner is there along with Pompeo and two members of the National Security Council, and in addition, the Pentagon has sent two senior officials, their top military strategist and the technical advisor for AI. So they're getting ready to go into Iran, or will you think a surgical strike might be possible?
Listen, I would suggest that they will be trying some kind of false flag of whatever sort. You know, maybe even a nuclear one, George, who knows. But something to that they can then say is all Iran's fault, you know, and then they can have some sort of causes belli to try and start the war. Of course, the media war machine, the spearhead of the war machine, is also at Bilderberg. And they're not reporting what is being said in Bilderberg. They are part of the conspiracy. They are now the spearhead of the war machine. So in other words, to get the politicians around the world and the ordinary members of the public and, of course, the editors and the journalists to get behind a war, they need to con them. They only need to con them for a few days or weeks. I mean, we've seen recently, haven't we? You know, there was that missile strike the cruise missile strike on Syria a couple of years ago after the so-called Duma chemical weapon. And it turns out that they're actually the OPCW, the Chemical Weapons Organization, actually suppressed a report which was saying that it was nothing to do with the Syrians.
Right.
You know, this was so what they do is they'll con you into thinking, oh, something dreadful has happened and X is behind it, in this case Iran, and then they'll retaliate for something that actually never happened. This is very much like the beginning of the Vietnam War, the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which I'm sure, you know, many of your listeners know about. Now, after the event, we can see. So they'll be trying something like this, I think, with Iran, George.
Right. There have been broadcasters that have been using the attack on those oil tankers in the Persian Gulf as legitimate attacks by Iran. I've heard them actually say that.
That's right. And of course, it is possible that the Iranians are sending a signal. saying, look, this is what can happen around here
right.
if you start getting silly. Because, of course, nobody was actually hurt in these attacks, and it was just a very strong signal being sent to the people that owned the tankers, the people that liked to get their oil coming through the pipeline, that, you know, they was very readily repairable, the pipeline attack by drones. But, you know, either side could have been behind that, George, honestly. We just simply do not know. These things are shrouded in secrecy, and it's the sort of exercise that could be taking place to sort of prepare the public for demonizing Iran. And that, I mean, as we've said before on this program, that, you know, you get a conflict between Iran and the US or Israel. This is very soon going to bring in the Russians. I mean, what happens if a whole load of Russian transporters arrive in Tehran and suddenly the Americans are facing Russian troops in Iran? That's quite feasible that that might happen. The same sort of thing could happen with the Chinese. China is absolutely keeping its beady eyes very closely on this Middle Eastern conflict. The United States and Britain and the West generally, NATO particularly, have lost in Syria. They've lost that particular battle. They were trying to take over the country and they failed. And so that sent a very, you know, it's like the road to Damascus. We've said that. But what we see is the West is not giving up at all, and they're actually doubling down because they've got to keep their war going in order to keep their credibility going. And actually, they're sort of into a bit of a maniac phase. One thing I also must talk about a little bit here is this report that was in the Financial Times a few weeks ago, which is about the Israeli Pegasus 3 software. I mean, I don't know if you've come across the story, because nobody else really covered it, only the FT, George.
What are you saying? Go ahead and expand on that.
It's a company called NSO. It's a technical group over in Israel, and it's built a $1 billion business with software that can hack an iPhone and WhatsApp, offering Israel a diplomatic calling card. But it's also been accused of helping repressive regimes spy on dissidents. And it's a brilliant report. But what it shows you is that we don't really need to be worried about Huawei. We need to be worried about Android, because this software is using the operating systems on our phones to steal information from journalists and lawyers. So, for example, to give unfair advantage in court cases, to enable legal action to stop stories coming out, which are disadvantageous to someone who's rich and powerful, and possibly even involved in the murder of a journalist in Mexico, which is another thing that this article is alleging. So we need to be extremely conscious that whilst everyone is talking about Russia and the dangers of Russian hacking, actually the Israelis have been selling this software to repressive regimes all around the world, and it's quite feasible that it's being used to help murder journalists. I don't know why this story has not really got any traction, even though it's a whole a full-page story in the Financial Times, and it was reported on the BBC World Service too, but almost nowhere else, even though what it's exposing is basically Google. Yeah, so Google and Android is totally compromised. And in fact, WhatsApp have put out this is one of the things that was the main repercussion in some of the other mainstream press, you must do a security update to WhatsApp. This was a story just a couple of weeks ago. But if you drill into why, this Pegasus 3 software and this company in Israel has been absolutely compromising every single person in the West who's got this kind of phone. And you know why they don't report it? Because it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing that they've been banging on about the Russians all this time, and actually it's their homegrown allies, the Israelis, and their homegrown software, which is Google Ads, which is the problem, not Huawei at all. So it's what the BBC sometimes used to come up to me and quietly say, Tony, sorry, the wrong story.
Yeah, there was a guy that did a study in Washington, D.C., on an iPhone, and they were picking up everything on his phone they could pick up, different mechanisms.
Another story is to do with the data mining people taking everything from your phone at night time. So switching your connection on somehow remotely, and switching your phone on or off, possibly, as well, and just taking data off your phone at night while you're asleep, you know. So this is, you know, the it's interesting how the way they've... First of all, the person who's in the world who's been revealing most of this is, of course, Julian Assange. He's been blowing the whistle on criminals within our own system, within Microsoft, within Google, you know, the people who create this Android software, all this other spyware, etc. He's been dishing the dirt on them, the CIA, hacking cars in order to murder people, potentially hacking aircraft, trains, power stations, nuclear power stations even, in order to send them critical. All this stuff has been being leaked by Assange and WikiLeaks. And now what's happened to him? He's had to be transferred to hospital. The man should be made a national hero. He should be given a medal. He should be given a Nobel Peace Prize, because what he's done is he has exposed the criminals within our own NATO and Israeli side of this international conflict. The people who are actually making all the running in regime change around the world, criminal activities, and there he is, unable to speak, and now transferred to a hospital attached to Belmarsh Prison in London. And he has committed no crime. No crime. So that's where we are. We're in a totalitarian, dictatorial system. And now it looks as if the criminals in charge are going to do everything they can to create a massive financial war later this year, in order to try and get themselves out. And that, I would suggest, will be triggered by this false flag. And that's why we've got so little reporting of Bilderberg. Just a bit of stuff in the Daily Express. Even the Daily Mail Online didn't put anything in the paper. I did check it today. Nothing in the actual newspaper itself. So they want to keep the public ignorant, George.
Right, exactly. Some of the topics are really funny, like the ethics of artificial intelligence, the weaponization of social media that they're doing. You know what I mean? The very subjects that they have here are the ones they're guilty of. A little projection, right? Exactly. Huh?
You hit the nail on the head. What they're doing is the things that they are guilty of, they are accusing others of.
Right.
There's a name for this.
Projection.
Yeah, and it's the behavior of a psychopath.
Yes, exactly.
So this is a bit, I mean, anyone that's anything about psychology knows this. These people are sick. They need to go to a mental hospital if this is what they're doing. I mean, some of the stuff they're coming out with is unbelievable. They say a stable strategic order. Okay, but they have deliberately destabilized, with NATO and the Israelis, the whole world, George.
Right.
They're putting on their thing, a stable strategic order. Well, there's also the another topic for discussion this weekend is, what next for Europe? Well, that's a funny question, isn't it? A good question, because the United States of Europe is falling apart. It doesn't look as if it's going to work. And the reason it's not going to work is almost deliberately been scuppered. At least that's the way I can see it. Because if they had been a little bit more generous with money from the euro and they'd have controlled things, people would have started loving the euro. Everyone would have had the euro. But they're too greedy. The other thing, of course, is China. That's on the list, which has taken over the US role as the world's superpower, both financially and potentially too, because they are prepared to fight long wars, defensive wars, and also to get the moral high ground. So the troops and whatever is fighting for the Chinese side will feel that they're doing the right thing, whereas there'll be demoralized troops on the US side, because they'll be feeling, well, we're just trying to take over the world, and of course that's not necessarily, within international law. The Russians, they're on the list, of course. The reason they're there is because the Russians won't do what we tell them to.
Right.
They're an independent force. No independent thinking is allowed, of course, in this new world order. The future of capitalism, well, that's another funny one too, because capitalism died in 2008, but according to anybody who knows anything about economics, there has been no real capitalism since 2008, because all the money in the world is funny money, it's all quantitative easing made up out of nowhere, backed by nothing. And that's the only thing that's been keeping things going. So, you know, what's the future of capitalism after the post-Brexit euro-dollar crash?
Right. Hey, there's a seminar next month, this month, in Washington, and the name of the seminar is The Crony Capitalism. Yeah, it's going to be held
another thing on the
group up there in D.C.
Yeah, Another new agenda is Brexit, which, of course, is all about blowback for trying to politically unite Europe by stealth. You know, they did try to do it by stealth, and so they've had blowback, which means that, you know, Brexit and other countries are going to follow. I don't know if you noticed, but the Catalan leader was elected as a member of the European Parliament, and Brussels have said, oh, well, he can't stand, he's going to go to jail instead. So this is how EU works. If they get somebody who's elected that they don't like the look of, or the shape of, or the politics of, well, he's not allowed to take up his seat. Like the Puigdemont, I think is his name. From Catalonia. Okay, so you mentioned the ethics of artificial intelligence. This is all sort of sci-fi stuff, but it's real, becoming real nowadays. Well, with killer drones, can there be any ethics?
I don't think they can. Boy, I tell you what, that stuff was really bad news, those drones. You know that? They really did a job on everybody. And, you know, of all people, Barack Obama used them more than anybody up to his time. Yeah. So they're deadly, boy. They're bad news.
Well, I mean, but the point here is that these drones, you know, as soon as there's any sort of automation of them, they just become like. Oh, is this another thing, George? About you just reminded me, which is James Baker there, who's the head of the War Games Center at the Pentagon.
Right.
Now, this is really, really interesting because, of course, all of the stuff they're trying to do around the world, they game it first. Okay, so back in the old days, they used to have board games which were, sort of little hexagon sheets, and they would map out somewhere, they'd have the various units, and they'd fight out these games. This is the Chicken Hawk Generals. You've never actually heard of, you know, a bullet fired or a missile fired in any war zone. And they just fight these games, and then over the years, of course, they've brought in computers into these war games, so it's all kind of simulated on a screen, and or virtual reality, of course, sort of, you know, the 3D virtual reality games that so many young people are addicted to because they've got no power. Are in the real world, so they, you know, they're sold this disc of dreams of power, you know, where they start fighting and they think that they achieve something by it. I mean, it's all psychological, actually, all this video war gaming, and of course the military use those war games to recruit kids. So, you know, you get a good score on a military war game, and you get a letter from the Pentagon saying, right, we want you, sonny, you know, come and work with us, and you can kill some real people rather than those pretend ones on the war game. But the War Games Center is really, really important, and that's because they would have been gaming all these conflicts, gaming conflicts with Russia, gaming conflicts with Iran, gaming conflicts with China, and there's a massive problem is that you've got these for-profit companies like Blackwater now who will be bidding in these sorts of scenarios, saying, well, okay, we can win a nuclear war with China. And we've gained it, and we've successfully beaten the Chinese at nuclear war. And they can then sell that game plan, that war plan, to the military. So that's why these wargaming people are so dangerous. In fact, there should be laws and regulations governing what they're allowed to do. Because what they're doing is they're trying all sorts of different ways to win a war on a virtual reality or on a computer somewhere, a computer game. And then when they start winning that war on the computer game, then they start thinking, right, we can win the real war, and they get things started. They're not thinking about the potential millions of casualties, the devastating effect it's going to have on the rest of the world. They're just thinking about, well, this will give us credibility in the next vote, in the next US election, and they're thinking about domestic policy. They're also thinking, of course, about making money out of that war, selling lots and lots of weapons, and gaining lots of natural resources. So the war games people are a dangerous lot, actually. And, you know, historical war games, you're playing Napoleonic war games or something, there's not a problem. But what bothers me is these, you know, people like James Baker are actually starting to sell a winnable war with China, sell a winnable war with Iran, as a salesman to people at Bilderberg. And these are the people that are prepared to, you know, stand to make money out of these wars. So that's a whole other aspect to it, George, which I think is hardly even thought about and considered, and another reason why we could quite possibly expect some sort of false flag later in the year and it will kick off with the Iranians. Mind you, of course, Iran has had, you know, what, 20 years at least really now to prepare for something like this, and so, of course, they'll be absolutely 100% ready for it when it happens.
Right. Charlie Skelton had something to say in this article about Henry Kissinger, and listen to this a second. This is the next to last paragraph. You might not like or admire Henry Kissinger. You might want him strung up for war crimes, but you have to admit, he's a heavyweight statesman and historian. He's a psychopath with vision. Where did Bilderberg find the serious ideologues to lead them into the 2020s? So he's saying that with Rockefeller gone and Kissinger on his last legs, that the Bilderberg doesn't have anyone of the same stature, I guess. You know what I mean?
It's a really good question, because when Rockefeller went, I think something went, actually.
Yeah.
Bilderberg was, he was a source of moderating influence. It's difficult to, say, but obviously he would be someone who was, behind the Iraq invasion and all that sort of thing. Having met him, I just found him a sort of fairly cool customer and quite, a gentle guy. Whereas it seems to me that the people have been taking over him from him on the steering committee, like John Saws, the former head of MI6, these are a much harder crowd. People like Eric Schmidt from Google. We need to have a look at who it is that seems to have taken over the mantle of the, the Rockefellers obviously started with oil. Very quickly realizing it was much easier to just press a button and make up a whole load of money rather than dig oil out of the ground. So they got into banking. And so his main role, really, Rockefeller, was as a banker. Now, with the modern version of him, I think, on the Bilderberg steering committee and the main, steering, I mean, they seem to have a board now rather than the official steering committee, but certainly one of the senior people who comes back year after year is Peter Thiel. I think he's taken on that role that David Rockefeller used to have, which is as a big, big money finance guy. And, of course, he's one of the people behind many of the enormous, great internet tech giants now, like PayPal, Facebook, etc., etc. So he's taken that role. But the question is, who is going to take Kissinger's role? This is another thing. Kissinger is getting towards the end of his life, and it seems to me that he's been plotting and planning all this stuff for years. He would like to see some war to show, that it's all been worth all this plotting and planning. And it may be that, he would like to see something happen before he dies. And in fact, he doesn't really seem to mind, certainly his track record, if millions of people die as a result of what he does. We're looking at the horrific coups and in Chile, the invasion of Cyprus, the overthrow of democracy and the implementation of the mafia state in Indonesia, massive, massive police trouble. All this stuff that Kissinger's been involved with over the years. And much stuff which we don't necessarily know about, which is still secret, which will come out, I'm sure, one day. This is the big one for him, is, getting this conflict going. And, of course, in the Middle East, it has this potential relationship back to the whole Albert Pike letter. Now, a lot of people say that never existed, but the fact of the matter is, it does seem as if what Albert Pike said has been, or didn't say. Some people say he never even said it. But it seems to be the recipe for these various conflicts, the First World War, the Second World War, and this one that's been brewing up now between Israel, United States, the Christian Zionists, the Jewish Zionists, and the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is this is there in this Albert Pike letter from 1871. This is effectively what it is. And, the Christian Zionists and the they'll be called the Christian fundamentalists, George, don't they? They call them evangelicals and all this sort of thing. Actually, these are the wrong terms. The Zionists are a particular breed of Christian who have a very, very strange idea. I would actually say they're nihilists. They don't actually really believe in anything, but they're prepared to take on a mantle of Christianity to get what they want, which is war. So that's why they're nihilists. And that, I think, is essentially what's happening with, with the takeover as Kissinger starts to get towards the end of his life. He wants to see this through. He's been working for years and years to get these conflicts, brewed up, as it's called in the military, hardening the sides. The sides have been hardened. The Iranians have been militarily isolated. They've been financially isolated, although they've got allies, with the Russians and the Chinese. See, the sides have been hardened, and I think, Kissinger will probably want to see this war kicked off before he dies. But then the other thing is, who is going to take over from him? I would suggest you looking at Peter Thiel as a Rockefeller and Eric Schmidt as the new Kissinger. So that's my take on you know, some of the major figures.
One thing that news just broke: Conrad Black received a pardon from Trump.
Yeah, that's not news. That's about a week ago, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, it relates to this because he used to be the chairman of the Bilderberg meeting for several years, Conrad Black.
I believe he was on the steering committee. That was when
he was chairman, Tony, several years in a row.
He was the owner of the Daily Telegraph.
Well, Hollinger Corporation is what he had.
It's one of the reasons they wanted him in, you know, because they wanted the Telegraph behind Bilderberg. But then he was disgraced and sent to prison for, you know.
The Hollinger Corporation is what he milked. He took $12 million illegally out of the Hollinger Corporation, which owned the Telegraph, the Chicago Sun-Times, and a bunch of newspapers all over the world. A lot of them in Canada and the United States. So they finally caught him in that, put him in jail.
What I was saying about Thiel and Schmidt is that we moved into basically the digital media.
Oh, you make a good point. I call him Thiel. You know, Peter Thiel is like the high-tech Rockefeller, maybe, or someone like that. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. He's like a super high-tech, cyberpunk Rockefeller.
But he's established this investment company, but Palantir is his, you know, high-tech intelligence gathering mechanism, right?
Basically, they're data miners. Tony, what's going to happen with it.
Palantir just received an $800 million contract from the Pentagon.
Yeah, so they're
$800 million.
The high technology behind these modern wars. Anyway, George, look, it's great to chat.
Right.
That my interview live from Bilderberg with Charlie Skelton is up on thisweek.org.uk.
Okay.
And my radio show. And also afterwards I spoke to Manfred Petrisch, who spent most of his working life in Switzerland as a banker working in the finance sector in Switzerland. So he knows the country very well. And I think it was fascinating to get his take on what Switzerland's role has been. Even though it's not officially in the European Union, you know, it's very much involved in this whole attempt to unify Switzerland. Unify Europe into one kind of country. And so his take on it also is, he makes it absolutely clear. Bilderberg's a fascist organization, and he explains how and why, and how its roots were in the Nazi Party. And so there were so many Nazis that went along to these original meetings that back in the 1950s, these people had been Nazis, but some of the politicians and the business people from the West that were meeting up with them at Bilderberg at the first meeting in the Oosterbeek Hotel near Arnhem back in 1954, and the subsequent few meetings, the people who were meeting with these Germans and Austrians had no idea they had been Nazis during the war. We only know now, through years of research and the internet and other things which have helped us discover a bit more about these people's past, that there were a whole bunch of Nazis sitting around at the table there with the Western business people. And this, to me, makes it absolutely clear what the EU and what Bill is really about, which is to actually implement the Nazis' financial plans for a European Union, for basically a cartel system of big business the entire continent. So all the major financial activity would be controlled by a handful of people. And, you know, this is not democracy, this is not free trade, not capitalism, really. It's just tyranny. And that's what they represent.
Corporate fascism, right? What it is. What it sounds like.
Yeah, corporatism.
Yeah.
Which is what Mussolini classed it as.
Yeah.
So they're basically now in a position where they are in a great deal of power, but there is this movement against centralization of power. And it may be that's why they want this war, George, because a war will maybe kick Brexit down the road. It will kick the the various countries splitting off from the EU, which is Greece, Italy, France, even Germany, talking about, you know, splitting away from the European Union. It will kick that can down the road if there's a war.
A good point is, you know, those southern tier or European Union, they've invited the anti-Brexit people from those different parties, political parties from those countries into the Bilderberg this year. So you're exactly right about that.
Telling them what they want to hear, George. They're believing their own propaganda, but the reality is that Europe is turning, the tide has turned.
It is breaking up, and I see it breaking up for good eventually. Yeah,
good being the word, because, I mean, we can live together, we can trade together, we don't have to have wars, you know, so we'll get along fine. But without Brussels as a kind of millstone around our neck, you know?
Right, exactly. That's the way I feel, too. I've got to go now. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Tony. We certainly appreciate all your good work and your hard work. Thank you very much. Okay?
I would suggest, great, you know, check out the Newsweek article that Charlie's done, but also have a listen to his report on thisweek.org.uk.
I'll put it up on the site. I'll get it up. Okay.
All the best, George. Thanks very much.
Back to you. Yeah.
Cheerio.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Tony Gosling from Bristol, England, and we had a very nice conversation. And Charlie Skelton, there is a friend of his, was writing for Newsweek. And he wrote a very, very good article. We're going to have it up on our site. Go to thesecrettruth.com, and you'll not only see the click-offs for Tony and his site, and he's had Bilderberg.org up and running for a number of years. So Tony's been to some of these. I've only been to one, and that was in Copenhagen 2014, and I actually put on a seminar with Farrell Montgomery, entitled "We Are We the People Bilderberg," I think the name of it was. Now, let me get back to Tony. Had to go; he's pretty busy on this weekend. But let's go over just a few things before we sign off for this first hour tonight. And the key topics that the Bilderberg Group is taking up over this weekend is, number one, a stable strategic order. Their order is being, you could say, jeopardized by some of what Trump's new agenda is. The new agenda of the Trump agenda is threatening their new world order. And so they're at odds with him. But it just so happens that not only Jared Kushner, but two members of the National Security Council are there, and also the Pentagon had two senior officials, their top military strategist and their technical director for AI. I did a real quick count. We have at least 33 people from the United States there. Britain has about 12 or 13, and then you have a sprinkling of a lot of other countries with lesser numbers. Number two is, what's next for Europe? They are scared to death, the Bilderberg, of the Brexit. So they're trying to kill off the Brexit movement in UK, and they have several people there. One Lord Adonis is there. He's an outspoken critic of Brexit. Number three, climate change and sustainability. This Paris conference did not go over big now that Trump is pulling out of all of this. So they've got a real problem with Trump, even though Trump's got quite a few people there. And Pompeo did a secret visit also yesterday to the Bilderberg Group. So we're not being told the whole story all the time. Number four, China. What's happening in China is that President Trump is trying to level the field a little bit and get a more comprehensive, fair trade agreement with China. It's been slanted in favor of China. But with that said and done, the world elites set up this thing, and they had Barack Obama in their pocket. So the tariffs that existed at the time, they didn't want changed. Along comes Trump, and he said, we need a level playing field for the United States. Well, the playing field that the world elites, the globalists, they set up favored their companies and their locations. So Trump has really disturbed their whole game, and they're not happy about it. Okay, let's get back to Russia. Russia is not as major a player as you might think, though they have the nuclear, and that does make them a major player in Eastern Europe. So they'll be talking about it. They have some consultants there from our Security Council. We have a few people from the National Security Council that will address this at the Bilderberg meeting of all kinds. the future of capitalism. They've had this inclusive capitalism coming out of the UK, but that was just a hustle by, the British elites and others, okay? They've been practicing what we call crony capitalism, meaning that they've owned the central banks for decades, and they don't want to give up ownership of that. So they're just trying to salt pedals inclusive capitalism and make people think that they can be included in this capitalistic city, but at the system. But at the same time, they're behind the world communist movement, and they've been at it since the Fabian Society that was first founded in the 1880s in the UK. Okay, Brexit. Brexit, boy, they are adamantly against the breakup. They're for nurturing. You say the European Union, they started out with it years ago in France. Jean Monnet was the founder of the European Union. And so their focus is to unify Europe into a United States of Europe. And they don't like this Brexit at all. Now, number eight, the ethics of artificial intelligence. They don't have any ethics at all. These people don't. So they're just pushing this to me. This is just wallpaper, you know, just to make things look nice, like they really care about, you know. And also number nine, the weaponization of social media. They're the ones weaponizing these mechanisms. We really saw this weaponization of the intelligence operatives and groups, communities against Trump. And these people, along with the British and the Western European powers, they wanted to take Trump down or keep him out of office. They didn't do that. Then they tried to stab me the first 2 years by attacking and eavesdropping and intercepting his communications without him originally knowing, but he was informed later. The importance of space. We have several people over there from our State Department, actually from the Pentagon and so forth, that specialize in space. And I can give you those names in just 1 second. Let me see what they are. Okay, let me tick off some of the Americans here. Marie-Jose Kravis, she's there. Stacey Abrams is there that was unsuccessful in winning the governorship of Georgia. She's the founder of Fair Fight, so they're grooming her for the future. Roger C. Altman, he's a founder and senior chairman of Evercore. He's been there almost every year last 10 years. James Baker, he's the Office of Net Assessment, Office of the Secretary of Defense. He's a big name. He's there. Jared Cohen, founder and CEO of Jigsaw, part of Alphabet or Google company. He's there. Matthew Daniels, New Space and Technology Projects, Office of the Secretary of Defense. He's there. James O. Ellis, chairman of the Users Advisory Group, National Space Council. He's there. Niall Ferguson, Milbank Family Senior Fellow, Hoover Institute, Stanford University. He wrote the definitive book on Rothschild family. He's there. Adam M. Grant, he's the Wharton School of the University, Pennsylvania. He's there. Mary K. Henry, International President, Service Employees, International Union. She's there. Melody Hobson, President of Aerial Investments. Reed Hoffman, partner of Greylock Partners. Vernon Jordan, he's big name. Lazar Friar, they're one of the owners of the Federal Reserve. He's there. Alex Karp, he's CEO of Palantir, which is an intelligence gathering operation first put together by Peter Thiel, okay, years ago. With 12 million in CIA money, they just got a $800 million contract from the Pentagon. Kissinger is there. Something else. Stephen Kotkin is there from Princeton University, International Affairs. Henry R. Kravis is married to the lady that's on the steering committee. He's a Kohlberg, Kravis, Roberts and Company. Okay, Jared Kushner there. We know he's the in-law, son-in-law of the president. Okay, Megan McArdle, Washington Post. She's a friend of the One World Government, the New World Order. Claire McCaskill, a senior analyst, NBC News is there. Okay, we've got John Micklewaite, editor-in-chief of Bloomberg. He's there. okay, Satya Nadella, chief executive officer of Microsoft, is there. David Petraeus, former CIA director, he's a chairman of the KKR Global Institute, he's there. Matthew Pottinger, director of the National Security Council, is there, senior director. Okay, so we've got, let me see what else we have going here. Robert Rubin is there. He's a long-term member of this club. David Sanger, national security correspondent, New York Times. Natalie Escalo, fellow at the Houston Institute. Eric Schmidt, Google. Peter Warren Singer, strategist of the New America. Timothy Snyder, professor, history, Yale. Peter Thiel, or Thiel, is there. Thiel Capital, but he's also founder of Palantir. And let's see, Matthew Turpin, director for China National Security Council. And let's see, Darren Walker, president of the Ford Foundation. And that's about it for the Americans that are there at Bilderberg. So what we have is a very, very large contingency of Americans there discussing very, very serious, you could say, subjects. The Bilderberg meeting, the first meeting was 1954 at the Bilderberg Hotel in Utrecht, Netherlands. It was financed by the CIA, and Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands was the host of that year. And of course, later on, they go by Chatham House rules, which states that participants are free to use the information received, but neither the identity nor the affiliation of the speakers nor any other participant may be revealed. So they're there to go and receive information from other speakers, but they're not allowed to distribute that or tell about where they got the information. It was a surprise that was revealed about Pompeo. Pompeo is Christian, on the Zionist, Christian Zionist side, like Tony was saying earlier. And so he's in favor of the rebuilding of Israel and the Zionist movement to Israel and the rebirthing, you could say, of the state of Israel. So that's basically what Christian Zionism is about. So the focus, we know, is going to be against Iran. And in their focus against Iran, they're doing war planning, I'd say initial war planning here, and to see how they can stymie somewhat the nuclear, you could say, development that everyone knows that Iran has underway, but has never stopped, that we don't believe. Iran is a large country with 80 million. It's got a Revolutionary Guard force that dominates the military, and it's reports directly to the mullahs. The mullahs came in after the Shah was run out and defeated, you could say, and took over some of the foundations that the Shah had created, but created new ones. Now, today, in Iran, you have these large, you could say, foundations that are administered by the religious sector, the mullahs and their people. So the people working in these religious, in this religious sector benefit greatly from insider information, non-taxation by the government, but contracts and so forth. So some in Iran are saying that there's a plundering that's been going on by the mullahs of the Iranian treasury. And, the people out there are suffering in different areas. They can't get good palatable water. Potable water is not available in parts of the country. The cost of food and eggs and the inflation rate is high, and they're disgruntled. It's a younger population, maybe half of the population, you could say under 40 years of age, and they do have access to the internet. So they have to go with some of these new standards that Islam authorities have put out. But it's Western oriented. They are Persians. They're not Arabic, you know. They're not Arabs in a sense. So they are a different type of people, see. And so they're just really different than you're going to find in the general area. And that's what makes them different. And, it's just entirely a different breed of people. Now, Adonis, Andrew Adonis, is a member of the House of Lords, and he's a anti-Brexit. He's there. And, Mark Carney, governor of the Bank of England, is there. Jeremy Fleming, this is, the director of the British Government Communications Headquarters, the equivalent of the NSA there. That's big dogs. Timothy Ash Gordon is professor of European Studies, Oxford. Lund is there. Chairman of Norbo Nordisk is there. Zany Minton is there, editor-in-chief of The Economist, which is owned jointly by the Rothschilds and the education group over there. John Sawyer's MI6 is there. And it goes on and on. I mean, you've got some very important people there. And, they're working, okay, on putting together the New World Order. And the New World Order has many facets now that it didn't have just 10, 15, 20 years ago. It's called the Internet. People are broadcasting like myself and Charlotte Littlefield Brown on the Internet. We started out with Genesis, and then we moved on back to much more of a Internet broadcast. But we're out here trying to bring a little bit of truth to the general audience, and it's not always that easy to do. So we want to thank each and every one of you out there and that listens to this. And just hang in there. Try to do the right thing. Forgive yourself and others. And just, hang in and try to help your neighbor. I mean, I go by the New Testament myself, and I don't know, some of my listening audience, they're probably atheists or agnostics or whatever, And they might swear by the Old Testament. They may be into Judaism or whatever. I welcome each and every person out there. I welcome each and every heart that wants to do the right thing. And deep down in us, we do want to do the right thing. It's just that we begin to be mesmerized by an overwhelming system of rule and, you could say, propaganda and stories that we're lured and we're seduced into. We're actually seduced into a way of being that we little realize is really and much akin to a delusional state. And in that delusional state, it hides the fact that we are delusional. So it's hard for us to see and come out of that particular state of delusion. And this is it's ongoing. We haven't changed. We're human. We've got emotions. And to come out of it is not easy. But I say that forgiveness of yourself and others is a beginning of the way out. Again, I want to thank each and every one of you for listening. And tune us in next week. 7 to 9 every Saturday evening at this, thesecrettruth.com. Good night.